This is the Media Freak Podcast, the podcast made by people who work in media, spend a little bit too much time thinking about it, and probably shouldn't say half the things we do out loud, but here we are. Each episode, we discuss the latest media and advertising news, bring in expert guests, and provide you with our take on what's really happening in the industry. In today's episode, the broadcasters are jumping further down the digital rabbit hole. Industry leaders finally call out advertising blind spots. And is your agency making your job harder than it needs to be? So, who's on the mic? This week, Harriet has left us to fend for ourselves. So apologies in advance for what's coming. I don't know what she was thinking. So today, it's me, your host, Bricky from Coffee Cup. Charlie from Silver Push.
Hello.
Jack from Craft.
Ahoy hoy.
And stepping into the void left by Harriet, we are thrilled to have Michael Smith, Senior Enterprise Sales Director at Camp House.
Woo-hoo. Hello all.
Welcome
Hi, Michael.
Show.
Yes, thank
can
you.
Can I just ask, Bookie, is that how you answer the phone? That was the you sound much posher as a host.
Honestly, when I was practicing it earlier, I was like, I don't think that's my voice.
Oh, when you said you were going to do a Harriet impression, I didn't think you were actually going to do a Harriet impression.
Absolutely nailed it, I think.
I think so.
But so, Michael, we're super excited to have you on the pod today. As by way of a bit of an introduction, I have it on pretty good authority, my own, that you're a bit of a sales god in the advertising media world. Obviously, I mentioned currently the Senior Sales Director at Camp House, which we'll get into a little bit later. But previously, VP of Sales at Anzu, Sales Director at Unilad, Head of Sales EMEA at Zaxis, roles at Venetus and Rightmove. You've been agency side, you've been media owner side, you've been brand side, you've been the whole nine yards within the industry. Well seasoned, Charlie called you before we jumped on the pod.
Brutal.
Fair play.
Wow. Yeah, basically, you just basically said I've been around the block. That's kind of how
you have.
Really, and yeah, I have. No, it's good to be here, so thank you for having me.
And it's good to have someone who is just a little bit more knowledgeable to bring some actual real insights to us, I think.
Again, with the bullying, me and Charlie catching strays.
Every week.
I know. I'm sorry, guys, but I'm not. Well, anyway, as I kind of said, another bona fide big dog to add to our growing list of big dogs gracing the pod. So thank you very much.
Woof, woof.
But before we get into your current gig, first the news.
Extra, read all about it.
So last week, the BBC announced their new strategic partnership with YouTube, poised to deliver more for audiences and support creators across the UK. Did y'all see that?
Yeah,
it did. I mean, it's it kind of feels like they're a bit late to the party with Channel 4 and ITV and Sky already sort of being all over it. But I suppose that's the nature of the Beeb always being a little bit more cautious, right? But I think in the article it said about them expanding their presence on there. So they are already there, but it's like
they've got a massive presence already. I mean, they do like 15 billion views a year or whatever with their existing content, but that's all clipped content, whereas what this is creating new content to put on YouTube specifically.
Does this mean that we're going to get like BBC will be earning money from advertising on YouTube?
Yes,
outside of the UK for now.
Okay.
So far in the UK there still won't be any advertising, but outside they will. From their side, they have sold this as meeting audiences where they are, which of course sounds sensible, but being the Media Freak podcast, we have to just kind of interrogate. Is this a smart distribution move by the BBC, as we've just kind of been looking at, or are they basically admitting that YouTube now decides what mass reach looks like and they needed to jump on board, as you mentioned, Channel 4, ITV, they're already there. Is the BBC falling to it, kind of signifying, yeah, this is the way things are going?
Can we say yes to both of those questions? Like, that they kind of have to do it, but equally it's a bit of a... Oh, I wouldn't say a capitulation, but it's an acceptance of a changing of the guard, I suppose. But one thing that they've got to be quite specifically careful of is giving away too much of the power to what is ultimately like a foreign power. And I draw to an analogy here that I saw was Toys R Us back in the early 2000s that were the dominant force in the toy world. And they, when Amazon were sort of getting into the e-com world, Toys R Us actually paid Amazon, I think it was something like ridiculous, like $50 million a year or something, so that Amazon would do their e-com distribution for them. And what happened was Amazon owned the entire sort of tech chain and data and pricing. And we know where Amazon are today, and we know that Toys R Us went bust in 2017. So I think there's a cautionary tale in there, perhaps, as to giving away too much of your secret sauce to a nascent, not so nascent in YouTube space, but you know what I'm getting at.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting that you went for a toy analogy, because I think the first thing they listed on their press release was around the expansion of their content for children, because YouTube is massive for children, right? It's also interesting because we know from sort of the Barb measurement that came out of YouTube that Peppa Pig was the biggest channel in the UK on YouTube. And so children's viewing is probably the number one reason that they're getting into this. But
yeah, I mean, it's number one viewing by Barb measurement, and we know that was a short-lived experiment because YouTube are now suing, or they've done a cease and desist to Barb to say stop measuring what's going on. So that's an interesting one.
But, really?
Yeah, that's interesting
because I think that leads me to my second question on this, which was around the measurement. And obviously, we work in media. We have spent years collectively pretending, I would say, that Barb is a perfectly sensible way to accurately measure TV. Because let's be so for real. Is it? Either way, we've been doing that. But now if BBC are now trying to say, yeah, cool, we're happy to use YouTube numbers, can we all just drop the pretense?
But they're not going to be replacing their own sort of viewership with YouTube numbers. And I suppose the bigger question here is, are we saying it's better to let Google tell you how big they are or to have someone independently mark the homework? Because there's a reason they don't like independent measurement and they like telling you what they're doing. So I'm very skeptical that, because tech giants, they're there to sort out number one before they are anything else. And they've slunk away from Barb and sort of are threatening about it because they don't like the story it's telling off. And so now they're kind of backing out of the whole, yeah, we're TV narrative, just because it's not quite gone the way they wanted it to.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. But I think as a bit of a side point, whether we're comparing apples and oranges, we know the huge scale of YouTube. And the argument would suggest that this is additive reach. It may not be the same kind of reach, but it's additive reach. And I think really what we actually have to kind of drill a little bit further down into is that the BBC are government mandated to appeal to all audiences, and specifically younger audience. So the BBC charter is up for renew in end of 2037, I think it is, which scarily is the end of next year, amazingly. But and part of that mandate, so the green paper is already done, the white paper is coming out soon, but essentially that they are being forced or have to prove that they're reaching to younger audiences. Where are younger audiences? Well, they're not on broadcast, they're on YouTube. So there's a little bit of sort of government leverage in here as well that we have to remember.
I think just
green
just
paper. Sorry, two, go on.
Two, my two pence worth is, there was a report out last year that through BBC license paying, they're losing nearly £1 billion a year for people moving away from the standard traditional kind of TV. So is it just as basic as they need to fill a hole, that they've basically got a billion pound hole that they're seeing on a yearly basis? I'm just kind of thinking of it more at a basic level.
No, you're absolutely right. Economically speaking, it absolutely makes sense. And I think the other side we have to think of, are we comfortable with taxpayers' money effectively funding a foreign entity, which is what's going on? There's a lot of,
taxpayers' money?
Because the taxpayer is funding the content. The content's then being put on YouTube. YouTube is then monetizing it. The distinction there is clear. Yeah, it's the license fee who is paid by individuals in this country.
But then I suppose it's just a one step removed from funding Netflix or your Amazon subscription, right? So, like, I don't know what I'm arguing for here. Am I arguing for it? But, like, yeah. I think I'm just arguing with Charlie because I like to argue with him.
So, basically, what I'm hearing here is that it's a complicated situation. Like, it's giving, they've waited as long as they possibly could to do this, given the charter stuff you just discussed there, Charlie. Mm. But also, if they didn't do it, they have ran the risk of becoming completely obsolete anyway. So, it's a tough one. Watch this space. We'll definitely be discussing it again, I'm sure, at some point.
So, the billion-pound hull sounds terrifying.
Depends who you are.
You've got to fill the billion-pound hull, guys.
You can try. On to the next news story. Sticking with the broadcasters, Sky have recently launched their AI toolkit to help SMEs create TV ads. Now, Sky is saying that this is about democratizing TV advertising for small businesses. But let's be honest, is AI creative for TV a genuine breakthrough for SMEs or just a smarter way for the broadcasters to shift their inventory?
I mean, I've got... Right, okay, so this is broadcasters trying to capture money away from Google and Meta, right? Google and Meta make 80% of their revenue from SMEs. I don't know the number for broadcasters, but it's significantly smaller, as we know, because the barrier to entry for making a TV ad is higher. So this is just them trying to make a play at this, and Sky have done it before with sort of paying half of the costs for SMEs to get into TV. But that's the sort of reality of why this is happening. But I don't think we're going to see a material change in the big spots like a football. The cost of a football ad is still what, 10, 30, 20, 30 grand. That if SMEs can't afford to make an ad, they can't afford to be in that. Similarly, when big shows, same story. So I think most of this is going to manifest itself in, you know, daytime TV, where actually some of the ads are really quite crap. I don't know. Have you guys seen the ad where it's like a crossword? And you have to solve the crossword. It's a scam.
Yeah. I recently, on paternity leave, I really got acquainted with daytime TV, and it's bonkers. It's like 3 minutes long. But I think you're absolutely right, Charlie. Like, it's a DRTV play, and like that will work for a lot of small businesses. I think ultimately, also, it's like for a small business, it's appealing because everyone knows that anyone can get a Facebook ad going, but TV still has that kind of stature, that perceived expense that makes you look like a big brand. So it kind of gives you a sort of a trustworthiness, unless, of course, you're running a fucking crossword whilst explaining. It's so weird, isn't it? We need to look that up. We can put a link to it.
But so I was going to say, I hope you put the link to it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But the answer is Sunflower, by the way, because I have watched it and the answer is Sunflower. But yeah, carry on. Oh,
good. So now everyone can win the prize. But I think it's interesting because there's a couple of sides to this. So like, I like the fact that a lot of the broadcasters are saying, well, they're not just being like full AI. We're going to AI the actors and the voice actors and all this kind of stuff. A lot of them are saying, well, we'll try and continue to include human input where possible, which is great. I think ultimately businesses, if they can get something where they can eliminate that, then they will. But I'm also like, when it comes to AI ads, like if you work in the industry, you can spot them a mile off. Like, it's so easy to spot them. And I find it, I can't really look at adverts like from a layman's perspective because I'm just, because of working it, that you're looking out for it. But I don't think that Joe Public really gives two shits about an AI generated ad or not.
As long as the quality's there, right?
Yeah, as long as it's not really like spelt wrong and, you know, doesn't pass clear. Well, it will obviously pass Clearcast.
They've got built-in Clearcast approval. I can't remember actually the name of the company. It's Way something. I'll have to put that in the show notes as well. But they do have built-in Clearcast approval and BCAP approval, which is quite cool.
That's crazy. I think to your point, Jack, just to add, I think you're right. Rand and Joe Public won't notice, but the place where they will probably get a lot more outrage is if the AI ad seems to perpetuate like either like negative stereotypes or things that people don't like. That's what AI needs to watch out for, because it goes into and it it kind of goes straight to stereotypes. But if people start to get affronted, that's what they start to need. That's what they need to look out for.
I think it's probably less sort of like gen AI in that, like, drawing to the mean of information, and more just like, make this ad, make a person there. So I think it's got to be human driven, AI assisted, rather than AI generated as a whole. But you never know. We'll see.
It's got to be done right. If you saw, if you remember the backlash Coca-Cola got this Christmas, you know, they had the first AI-generated ad with, like, the holidays are coming, and some of the trucks were a third of the size. Some of them had, like, four wheels on one side and six on the other. And it kind of, and that passed all, like, you know, compliance they needed to pass, but it got so much backlash. They pulled it within, I think, 2 weeks of the campaign going live.
Yeah, I think inauthenticity. Yeah, they did. Yeah, so yeah. But inauthenticity is really, like, sacrosanct from a human perspective. And I think, yeah, any hint of that, we will counter it.
So, I mean, because it is, I mean, I stand by my point that I think that, like, the majority of people wouldn't care. But I think maybe because it's that Coca-Cola ad is, like, such a weirdly beloved part of, it's like a Christmas milestone almost. Maybe
exactly.
That's why. But.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think long term, this is probably a good. It's probably a good thing for small businesses if it opens up the possibility of TV advertising for them.
But, I think one key point I think is TV has such a high ROI is because it's up there, maybe the most trusted medium. I mean, I can't remember the stats off the top of my head, but it's like 1 to 7, whatever it is in terms of ROI, and it's trusted because of the high quality. And if we if we're putting out slop, is the AI favored word at the moment, isn't it? Then does the higher end lose its authenticity?
Well, it got in the US with local and national, and then obviously, you know, the national TV has the highest team perceived the higher quality ads, whereas the local has those nice. Those daytime TVs with sunflower as part of the crossword.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're already there without AI, aren't we? So, yeah, what am I talking about?
So, potentially a good thing in the long run, likely where we're heading, but we're going to have to keep an eye on it, make sure it's done right.
Thank God we're going to keep an eye on it.
I know.
That's what the industry needs.
What would the world do without us? So, before we move on to the last news segment, I think we wanted to get into a little bit more about Camp House. So, we're going to come to you, Mr. Smith. We don't normally, and we don't usually do pitchy stuff, but I actually think this is really interesting and really, and a space that as planners and activators, even from the junior level up a little bit more, need to be focusing on a little bit more. So I would love your elevator pitch for Camp House. What does it do? How can it make the lives of planners and activators and buyers better?
You've put me on the spot now. But who is Camp House? What is Camp House, and what is it? What does it kind of do? And what problems and what solutions? What does it solve? So Camp House, is a media operations platform in the shortest form. It's a platform that basically brands and agencies use to plan, visualize, and flowchart all their media activation. It essentially gives them a central source of truth across all their media. Now, like, media has evolved so much since I got into this space. You know, I'm going to show my age now. I was selling banners and buttons. There wasn't even CPM, wasn't even a thing. You know, it was like 10.
You're older than CPMs.
I'm not older than CPM because that's Roman rules. Thank you.
But suffered.
Oh, wow. Can I leave now?
She lets you pitch with one hand and then she slaps you with the other. That's the way she goes.
You know, he's like, I thought she was just going to pick on you two, but me as well. I literally.
Oh, anyone can get it. Anyone can get it.
I'm sorry, guys.
But they're basically banners and buttons. But everything's evolved. As we've seen, we've got the retail media, TV, social, everything's there. But one thing that hasn't when it comes to planning is Excel. You know, everyone still plans everything in Excel. And that's just bonkers. So something like Camp House is that solution where, you know, you're moving away from Excel, you're moving away from human error, and you're bringing everything into this one platform. And that's essentially what Camp Out offers, in addition to that, obviously we have elements of AI today, from basically autonomous briefing and autonomous planning round right away through to kind of data interrogation to ingesting actuals in real time back into the platform. But that's, if that's an elevator pitch, that's kind of what Camp Out does. As I say, we work with brands like L'Oreal, Heineken, Zalando, to name a couple of small brands. It's a little bit of a name drop there, but equally, you know, we're working with agencies as well. And, you know, a big part of why I joined is to work more with the end users that isn't necessarily always our clients. So our clients normally pay and choose because they want this central solution. Whereas, you know, then the agency's then told that they need to use this solution. So they're the end user. So my role is working more and more with agencies to kind of help them and support them, move them onto Camp Out itself.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is this. Essentially, you replace the rigmarole of multiple emails backwards and forwards because you've got autonomous briefing within the platform. Approvals, we're not losing them, because how many times are you digging through your email list trying to find the approval from a client that's now left? We don't know where it is anymore. We're replacing multiple versions of Excel spreadsheet plans and pulling all of that into one central place. As a planner, because I've been on that side of Excels and doing all of that stuff and then trying to then reconcile at the back of it, trying to reconcile from Prisma into an Excel spreadsheet, it's all horrendous. This sounds like something that sits in the middle of that and makes that a lot easier to do. So in my mind, all brands, all agencies should be all over something like this. Is that what you're kind of seeing, or are we in a situation where you're getting any pushback?
It's yes and no, and yes to the pushback as well. So there are, you know, brands see it because it's a huge value to them, because obviously, especially when you're working with brands that work with across five different holdcos globally. You know, so what you've got to think about is that every holdco has its own template. Every holdco has its own way of reporting. Every holdco has its own naming taxonomy. You know, so then when it comes back into client A, you know, they've got this data chaos. So for them, it's to kind of, how do they harmonize this data? How do they get it all in one place? So from an agency standpoint, from a client standpoint, yes, we're seeing that. And with the clever agencies, they lean into this. You know, they lean into this and they want to work with us and how to work at how to become more interoperable with a platform like Camp Out.
There are who the pushback is coming from there.
I was going to say, who's he saying the dumb agencies are? those bloody independents.
No, look, definitely not the independent. I'm doing a lot of amazing work with independents right now. So it's definitely not, I wouldn't say dumb agencies, because that's, you know, some agencies out there have built their own product suite, which kind of covers a lot of what we do. And if you are a brand that is looked after by that agency in every single market globally, their solution will be absolutely perfect for you. But for it, it's the ones that kind of, the pushback is some when you get, they want to use their source systems and their tools. And we're not trying to replace them, don't get me wrong, but we want to be able to pass data so the client has the data in it's how it wants, and the agency gets what it wants to do, what it needs to do. So that's kind of the interesting conversations. And yeah, they're definitely not done, but we're just kind of having a... it's been an interesting couple of weeks and the months of conversations with different agency groups.
Yeah, fair. Do you know, it's interesting, because this reminds me, when I was sort of looking into like what you guys do, it reminded me of when we first had Lego join Initiative when I was back at Initiative many years ago now. And they introduced Lumina as like the way to link to Prisma. And my job ended up being translating Excel plans that everyone still made into Lumina plans, which was a quick way to drive me out of the agency. in hindsight, probably constructive dismissal, but you know, we won't go there. But like, so I mean, I imagine the tech has come on a long way since then, because it was sort of coal in the back of the computer time.
Definitely. Well, I've I've been in this space for best part of 6 to 8 years now. I've only been at Camp House for a year. So I've worked at others. So I've kind of seen the differences and literally, you know, we talked about evolution earlier on with regards to the XL. That's completely apparent in what we're doing and what I've seen, the evolution of the, we were called a media planning tool when I first joined this space, and now we're more of an media operations platform. That kind of just goes to show where we've gone from. It's gone from basically an Excel on steroids, which is what it was originally, to a platform where you can have conversations with multiple teams in the same place at the same time. You can brief 100 different markets with one prompt from the platform because you've got that in place. You can ingest actuals in real time back in there. There is solutions in place with agency ERP systems where you can not have to translate between one platform and another, and you can upload that using a simple upload and things like that. I feel like I'm going not into an elevator. Yeah. I'm going to full blown
full pitch.
This is what
I think I'm down the elevator shaft.
Because honestly, it sounds banging. I think it's a really interesting way to look at it. I think you heard it here first. Smart agencies are on it. If you're a smart agency, pattern up. But thank you so much. I think super insightful, and I think something that I hope will help people in this space trying to understand what they can do to make this section of their jobs easier, because we can all say that this is it's awful.
Do you know who Michael should talk to?
Oomst.
You should talk to Alchemy Network.
Ah, what a fantastic segue into our commercial sponsor segment. In the MarTech landscape, we'd like to talk to you about Alchemy Network. Alchemy is a unique innovation consultancy that's helping companies gain competitive advantage through marketing and advertising technology. They work with over 550 brands and agencies globally, identifying needs and interests and saving agency folk time and effort by curating the landscape and condensing it down into bespoke, bite-sized sessions. They can be used if you have a specific brief in mind or simply as a form of learning and development to keep your finger on the pulse of emerging trends. Email hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out more.
Not just going to say this, I've actually had some conversation with Glyn about a number of different clients before, so I've actually worked with those guys, and another guy, Dan Best, that works with Glyn as well on a few different things. So we've had conversations, because that's another kind of ICP that we work with. The people are coming in to help basically transformation within agencies, within brands, and people like the guys at Alchemy have been people that we deal with on a fairly regular basis.
So nice. You personally know our previous guest, you know our commercial sponsor. I think my intro was bang on. You guys cussed me out telling me that was mean, but I think the intro was bang on. You've been around the block. Okay, so just finally, we're going to do the last news story. So, a Jack Benjamin, you know I love a Jack Benjamin Media Leader article, recently detailed how an anonymous group of senior ad industry leaders has warned of industry-wide moral failings.
Well, the ad industry is immoral.
Apparently so. We're just finding out. But basically, some senior voices in the industry have gone off the record, and I say off the record because that's important. I would have liked them to be on the record, but that's fine. And basically said the industry is funding hate, greenwashing, and rolling over on DEI. My question to you lot is this, as you kind of say, just a woke signaling by people who are not feeling a little bit griped? Or is it finally the real sign that the ad world has lost its moral compass?
I mean, it's not really virtue signalling, because they don't have their names against it, so they're not really gaining anything from it. But I think the fact that they don't want to have their names next to it speaks to a bit of a sea change in the industry as a whole, that people don't feel like they could comfortably sort of speak out against it. I think it's quite a senior group as well. And let's face it, with the amount of senior redundancies that there have been in sort of recent years, sticking your head above the parapet isn't you know, it's not something that people would necessarily want to do if you're sort of looking at your mortgage or something like that and thinking, I don't fancy going freelance.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because, yeah, as you point out there, like there are less senior people than there were before. We're in the business of making money. We're beholden effectively to shareholders. I mean, like, for instance, Publicis released their very fantastic results, whatever it was, today or yesterday, and the share price still dropped. So we're in a world that, like, you can still do everything right and lose your job and still do everything right and your share price drops. So it's very difficult. I think we as individuals and humans should always strive to do the best that we can do and make the best change we can. But the unfortunate reality is that there's sometimes market pressures that don't allow you to do that. And I think that's presented itself in the anonymity of this group.
That was very profound, Charles.
he becomes Charles when he's being profound.
Yeah, I've dropped the E. That's fully Charles. Yeah. No, I think that's a really interesting way to look at it, because I was of the camp of, you know, if you're going to say something, say it with your chest. Like, let's be so for real, because there's only one way we're going to clean up the industry. We've been saying we joked at the beginning just then that, you know, are we just finding out? We all know it. We literally all know it, but there's just no way to effectively have a decent impact. So I think you've actually articulated that quite nicely. I have a final question on this, which is, who should be setting the industry's moral standards? Because obviously they're currently set by money, but who should be setting them, do we think?
There's sort of two sides to it, because it's like, as people, we should be trying to conduct ourselves according to some sort of moral compass, right? But the thing is, ultimately, everyone's judged on whether or not they make money at the end of it. So I think some of the stuff they talked about is, like, you know, taking fossil fuel companies as clients. Like, should agencies do that? Again, it boils down to the fact that I don't think that people in our industry are sat in a sort of like a kind of a witch's coven trying to be evil, or like, let's go out and do like the worst thing.
But stroking a cat somewhere in a chair.
No one's stroking a cat inside a volcano, right? trying to be bad people. But there are these, you know, the decisions that present themselves.
You let things pass.
Ultimately, if you want to make money, they tend to lean that way. And that with the DEI thing, it's like, it's really bad because everyone's pandering to Trump, because the tone's been set from the top, hasn't it? It's a real shame, because I think a lot of, if you think about the people that, you know, all four of us know within the world of advertising, there are often some of the most kind of kind and empathetic people that you're likely to meet, really smart people who have like good moral codes. It is just weird that there's this kind of disconnect with the top of the pile. And it kind of makes you ask, at what point does that start to fracture a little bit? Which I guess is what these guys are asking.
The top of the pile were where we are at some point. You know, yeah. Would we make those same decisions? We'll never know. Maybe.
what do you reckon, Michael?
Well, I would today. I wouldn't make those decisions today. But who knows what happens in a few years' time? You never know.
Pressures are different. The pressures are different when you get there. We'll never know. Like, when we record this in a few years' time, when we are CEOs, we'll let everyone know what we decide.
What, the Media Big Dog podcast?
Yeah, the Media Big Dog podcast. Well, that wraps up this week. Thank you for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you like listening to our freak this week, remember to like, subscribe and share on your LinkedIn. Email info@tmfpod@gmail.com if you have a burning desire to share any feedback on the topics we discussed. And once more, a huge, huge, huge thank you to Michael from Camp House for bringing the big boy insights and hopefully making our planning lives a little bit easier in the future.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks very much.